That is a great one. Fantastic. It is so comfortable. These are the words that I heard as I was in the furniture store. Just a little backstory. Brittany and I recently bought a new house, and we had a little bit left over from the sale of our other one, and it was time to buy bedroom furniture. I have held her off for 10 years of our marriage. We have had mismatching dressers, one dresser, broken dressers, garage sale dressers, never matching dressers, Target dressers, Walmart dressers. We had a hand-me-down bed from my in-laws because their king-size mattress, it wasn't to their comfort. And so 3 months into our marriage, we got a king-size mattress, brand new. And we had the bed frame to go with it. And it stayed. It was the one that moved through three different houses with us, from the apartment to our first house to the last house to the new house. And that was our bed. 10 years. And now it was time to go to the furniture store. Mismatching. I'm telling you, the ones we bought from Target, they were the best ones because the kids have them now. But if you take all the clothes out, you can just put one hand on top of it and just shake it back and forth right there. I mean, it's just barely hanging on. All right. And so I'm just waiting for my son to climb up on the top of it and just flatten. All right. But there we were in the furniture store. Now, this is, I enjoy salesmen. I'm interesting in that way. I enjoy the art of a good sell. As a teacher, I feel like I sell everything I do all the time. I have to sell it to kids that don't want it. And so I understand the negotiating process. I get that they have to come in there and act like I'm getting the best deal that there is, that no one else in the store has been offered this exclusive. I like that. What I don't like, though, is getting the feeling that I'm being stalked. I don't know how to handle that. With my looks and my sarcasm, I usually don't have a problem with someone wanting to stalk me until I walk into the furniture store. And James saw us coming a mile away. We drove by the same furniture store the other day, and James was sitting on his Harley, so he was a cool guy. All right, we walk into the door, and it was just like we fell into, it's like blood in the water with piranhas. All right, as soon as we walk in, I mean, he's sitting there looking through a magazine. As soon as we walk in, drops it, and then starts coming after us. All right, and it's almost like a race. We want to get to the one that we like, and then talk about it before he ever gets there. And so, of course, James catches up to us. He's walking us down the aisles. We're mainly walking around things that we don't really want to try to lose James, like maybe that he'll get lost in the furniture store as we're going through. Because we can figure out what we like. When we like it, we'll come and get you, we promise. If we don't like it, we're just going to leave. You're not going to talk me into liking ugly furniture, all right? And so here, James, every time we walk by one, oh, have you seen, this one's made of pallet wood. This one is cherry wood finish. The sleigh bed is nice and smooth. Look, this wood is sturdy. Ma'am, take a seat on this mattress. It's soft. It's great. This one, oh, this one's comfortable. Lay down on it. Both of you get up there and lay down. I'll hold the baby. Just get up there. And you know what? Just to change things up, I would like a salesman to tell me something is not good one time. Like, we're just walking down. I just want him to come up and say, don't touch this mattress. I don't know why this one's in the store. Just go ahead and bypass this one. Like, just to make the irony of it all, maybe just to make us think that he's actually telling us the truth. And I told Brittany as we're walking through, I was like, is there anything that's not great in this store? Because he's just going by each one. This is the best one you could possibly get. No, this one is even better, but this one is still really good if you want that one. And so we're just going back and forth. And so he tells us, and he proceeds to tell us about the cotton fibers. And the the mixture of polyester with cotton, and how it breathes better in the mattress, and how this wood and what it took to go through, and the factory style and the warranties and all of this stuff. And in my head, there's only one question. And men, you're with me. What's the question? How much does it cost? Exactly. How much does it cost? That's all I want to know. If it's comfortable, I'll sleep on it. I don't give a darn if it's polyester, cotton, whatever. It can be burlap for all I care. If I like sleeping on it, then that's going to be good. How much does it cost? How much am I going to have to pay you over the next few years in order for me to sleep on this comfortably? Because until that payment plan is done, I am not going to be comfortable on this bed. And so how much does it cost? And then is it worth the cost? Is it worth me paying what you're asking? And you know what? Jesus never wanted to keep us in the dark about how much it was going to cost us to follow Him. If you would, take your Bible this morning, go to Luke chapter 14. This morning, Jesus is going to be talking to a large group of people. You see, Jesus at this moment in time in His ministry, He had turned into the thing to do. He was the fad of the day at this point. You heard of Jesus, the miracle worker, the one that's fed people? Let's go follow Him and see what is going on. If you're not following Jesus at this moment, then you're not with the in crowd. You're not coming out of your village and following Jesus down the street, then you don't get out much. He is the fad. He's the thing to do. For my older generation, He is sideburns, bell bottoms, and A-tracks. For my younger generation, He is the dab, fidget spinners, and Snapchat. If you're not doing it, you're not cool. Or you're not with the in crowd. And so at this point in time, Jesus is the fad. And so He has a large crowd walking with Him as He's going from village to village. And up until this point where we're going to pick up, Jesus had just, imagine that you're walking with Him, and a couple of days before He had given a story. And it's to the Pharisees. If you know anything about them, if you don't, they are the religious leaders of the day. They have the most money in the villages. They are the most prestigious. They're considered the most righteous because they have money, they have blessings, they have prestige, and standing in the community. And many of them, though, rejected Jesus because it meant them giving up their position to then worship Him and put Him in His rightful place. And so Jesus gives this story a couple of days before where we pick up, and He tells them, and He tells a story about a ruler, and that He invites all of His prestigious friends and His righteous friends to this dinner. And they reject Him. They turn it down. Turn down the invitation. Well, the ruler says, well, fine. If that's how it's going to be, go find the lame, the sick, the poor. Find anybody that you can in the streets and bring them in. And these people are rejoicing. Jesus is becoming the fad because He's for everybody. And everybody's, oh, anybody can come. The poor, the lame, these people that we thought did not deserve God's blessing and couldn't get Him. Now Jesus is available to everybody. It doesn't matter what background you are, where you come from, you are able to follow Jesus. That's what their mindset is. And so all of a sudden, Jesus' crowd has doubled. That's what everybody wanted to hear. And so here, Jesus is where our point is that Jesus wants to make sure that He answers that question, how much does it cost? Because at this point, people are thinking, it's free. Following Jesus is simple. We just walk around with Him and say we're with Him. We're a part of Him. Oh yeah, Jesus, yeah, me and Him, we're close. I walk with Him everywhere. I'm about 50 people back, but I still know who He is, and I travel with Him. I'm part of His entourage. And so, here Jesus turns around, just in the middle of walking, and Jesus stops, and we pick up in verse 25. It says, now great crowds accompanied Him, and He turned and said to them, if anyone comes to Me, and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be My disciple. Talk about a buzzkill. Jesus was a buzzkill. Everybody's excited. Hey, heal somebody. Throw some food out there. Do something great. And all of a sudden He stops and says, listen, if you want to follow Me, then you got to hate everybody else. And He tells them how much it's going to cost. And I want to encourage you today. I want us to answer two questions together today before we leave. How much does it cost to follow Jesus? And then is it worth the cost? Those are two things. We ask it in every other way, any other aspect of our life. Is it, how much does it cost? How much is it going to cost me to get this job? What more responsibilities am I going to have to do? What hoops am I going to have to jump through? Is it worth having the job? How much is this car going to cost me? Is it worth having this car? How much is this marriage going to cost me? Is it worth having this marriage? Every aspect we ask these questions. Why in the world do we cop out and say, following Jesus is free and I can do it how I want to do it? We have to ask the same questions. How much does it cost? Well, luckily for us, we don't have to sit there and try to figure out the cost. We don't have to get a piece of paper and all of a sudden measure it out or list it out or come up with a budget. Jesus tells us exactly how much it's going to cost. And he starts off by saying, you must hate your father, your mother, your wife, children, brothers and sisters. Now, understand here, this is the loving Jesus. This is the one that tells us to love the Lord thy God with all your heart, mind, your soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so he is not talking about an ongoing, raging hatred for other people, especially your family. But if we look back at Matthew 10, it gives insight to what Jesus is talking about. He says, listen, if you love your mother, your father, your wife, your siblings, your children more than me, then you are not worthy to have me. And many times we like to go the route of, oh, well, yeah, of course I love Jesus more. Yeah, I love Jesus more, but our actions show love. We all know that. Actions show love. I could tell my wife I love her every day long, but if I don't show it in some way, then more than likely she doesn't believe it. Actions show love. Are your actions showing that you love your family, close ones, more than Jesus? Or the opposite? And so he goes through. Well, let's look at this list real quick. So to hate your father and your mother, the parents. Your parents, to love them less than Jesus. To understand that, hey, mom, dad, understand the teens have a huge problem with this. Because mom and dad are supposed to be the figurehead. But a lot of times us as parents, well, we have dreams for our children. We want you to do this. If you could be a doctor, if you could be a lawyer, if you could do this or that, I just want you to be happy. But here it's saying, Jesus saying, no, listen, you have to love me more than them. Sometimes you're going to have to choose me over what your parents want you to do. And then it goes forward, even the spouse. Husbands, wives, Jesus is saying, listen, there are some things in your household that must be non-negotiable as far as loving Jesus more than each other. I can remember early in Brittany and I's marriage, I've always had a problem giving money, putting the money in the plate, filling out the checks. That was just not where I came from. It wasn't something that was natural for me. So look, what you're telling me is I'm going to write a check to this church and God's going to take it and do money things with it. This is 10% of what we're making. And my wife, I'd conveniently forget to write the tithe check. And then we're out of money. We can't do it anymore. And I remember my wife saying, we're going to give 10%. We are going to tithe, whether you like it or not. And this is one of those situations where she was taught and she understood loving Jesus more than me, more than my own desires, more than my own wants. She loved Jesus more to tell me what our family was going to do. And husbands and wives, we need to set a direction for our household. I guarantee you 50% of the people in here have a sign on your wall that says, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. But sometimes we need to make sure that there are non-negotiables in our household, the way that our family is going to run, to make sure that that is true. If you love your wife, your children more than me, you're not worthy for me. I'm sorry, but these are hard words to hear this morning because they are convicting and they should be convicting. Imagine studying this over the last 2 weeks, okay? I'm telling you right now, there's so many different things that I'm going through and I'm sitting here thinking, do I really love Jesus more than my wife? Do I love Jesus more than my children? Oh, to tell our children no. To tell our children you cannot go to that sports competition. You know what? The biggest thing, you have sports all week long now. When I can remember playing baseball and there would be no practice on Wednesday nights because it was a church night. Now we have faculty meetings, we've got sports meetings, that's when they schedule things, is on a Wednesday night. And that just blows my mind. Non-negotiables. Guess what? My kid will never go to a sports meeting on a Wednesday night. I will never go to a sports meeting. My kid will never have practice. And this is not me just being some godly person. We are having non-negotiables at our house. Luckily for my kids, select sports is going to be out of the picture. They have my genes. All right? We love sports, but we're not good at them. All right? And so it's going to be fine because I'm going to get to sit down with my kids one day and say, listen, you're not good enough. All right? It's going to cost me $3,000 for you to play in this select team, and you're missing Sundays. That is out the window, okay? Look, your dad got no higher than 5'10". We're not going to be basketball players, okay? All right? Second off, we're slow. We can't jump high, and we're unathletic. So, no select sports, all right? Play the rec leagues. Be good there. Have fun in school, all right? But we will have non-negotiables when it comes to interrupting our family, and with Jesus, it will be non-negotiable. There will be, well, this is just what my child will do. It's their dream. I don't know how many times I've heard that. Your child will not go to college to play sports. Stop telling me that that's their dream. Guess what? It's about 50,000 other people that are better's dream also. We must lay it down for our families, husbands, wives. We must set the direction for our children, not the children set the direction for our household. We have got to fight back and understand we love Jesus more than everything else, everyone else in our family. And that's going to include costing some of these relationships for you. And that's the hard thing. Sometimes you're going to have to walk away from mom and dad because they don't understand your faith. You're going to have to let your children leave and let them go do their thing. You're going to have to let your brother go off to do something. You're going to have to let your sister go down a road that you know is wrong for them. And you're going to have to tell them that, listen, I love Jesus more than you. I've got to live life this way. And Jesus is saying, listen, if you're not willing to do that, you cannot be my disciple. There's no, if you're willing to do that, or if you might want to do that, you could still kind of follow me here and there, and on Sundays and Wednesdays you're fine. No, if you cannot do this, you cannot be my disciple. They are imperatives. It is a solid no. Without this, you cannot do this. And he goes farther. He says, even your own life. Not just not loving everybody, your own wants and desires. Your own wants and desires. At one time, I wanted to be quarterback for the Cowboys, but God made me stop growing. And I wasn't fast. And I couldn't throw farther than 30 yards. So, sometimes your own desires, though, the job that you want, the school that you want to go to, the car that you want, sometimes all that has to be put on the back burner. Sometimes that has to go out and say, we stop asking, what do I want? What does Jesus want from me? And then he goes even farther. And here he says, whoever, in verse 27, whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And we love to take that phrase and say, oh, that just means sacrifice and stuff. Just, you know, I got to die to myself daily. No, here he just said that even your own life you must hate. But then he goes one step further and says, you've got to be ready to take up your cross. If you know anything about the historical aspect of this, this is an instrument of torture. This is an instrument that means death. This wasn't just a punishment. No, he's saying physical life at this point in time. You got to be to the point where you're ready to lay it down for me. Everything. Not just your possessions. Not just your family. But yourself physically. Sacrifice physically. Be ready to go down to the very last second for me. And, oh, I know, this is radical this morning. This is crazy. But it's not me telling you that. It's Jesus telling you that. We can only preach what the truth is. And Jesus is saying, you've got to be ready to die for me. And understand that last second decision, at that point in time, when you make that decision, that doesn't come on a whim. We talked about it with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You don't just wake up one day, see a good face on post on Facebook and say, hey, I'm ready to die for you. Boy, bring it on today. I'm feeling it today. Tomorrow, maybe not so much, but today I'm feeling it. No, when that decision would come, when we have to sit there and say, hey, I'm going to lay my life down at this point in time, this is something that is a lifestyle. This is something that is day by day consistency. I'm going to serve you. This is why I can choose this. It's just not waking up, you feeling good one day, and all of a sudden, hey, if someone threatens my life today, I'm ready to go ahead and go. No, it is a lifestyle commitment. And that's what Jesus is saying is, listen, you hate all this, you hate yourself, then you're ready to lay your life down, and that's what I'm going to ask of you. and I may even ask physically. And we see here, and so Jesus is breaking down the cost, and then he even goes as far to give us an illustration. And he says, which one of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation he is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. And then, or what a king going out to encounter another king in war will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes with 20,000? Which one of us ever taking something does not sit down and first count up what it's going to cost us? And that's what Jesus is saying here. Wake up, Chris. What is this going to cost us? First off, you're building a tower. You don't sit there and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to put a garden in. I'm going to buy... You know what? It's going to cost me $500 to put this in. I got $100. How many of you go to Home Depot, give them the $100, buy $100 worth of the $500 job, do about a fifth of it, and then just leave it? Well, I was kind of curving it right there, but I ran out of money, so I'll just wait until I get a little bit more and then go back. No. You buy the materials. You make sure that you have enough before you start the job. And Jesus is saying, understand what it's going to cost you to follow me. Count the cost. Add it up. Figure it out. When you have that taken, when you figure out that you're ready to go all in, that's when you follow me. But without that, you don't follow me. And then the king, if you have 10,000 troops and you go to meet someone in 20,000, aren't you going to first sit down and come up with a strategy if it's even possible for you to win? We got soldiers in here. You're not going to go into battle without knowing whether or not you can attack and actually have a chance to win. You're not blindly going to go out and double the men that you're going to have to face. And it says, listen, if it's not possible, then you just send terms of peace. You settle it before they ever get there. Why in the world do we think that following Jesus does not cost us anything? Why in the world would we not sit down and figure out what is it costing me in my life? I'm going to tell you right now, if you're sitting here today and it's cost you nothing, then you haven't been following Him. It should cost you something. It should cost you money. It should cost you time. It should cost you prestige. It should cost you desires. It should cost you things that you want. It should cost you something or it's not worth having. And He goes on. In verse 33, see, those first two conditions that we gave you, really, they're just subconditions. Here is the last thing. In verse 33, He says, so therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. Whoever doesn't give up everything that he has, not willing to lay it all down, you cannot be my disciple. What are we holding on to today? Is it our time? Is it our pride? Is it our money in some cases? He that does not renounce everything. Renounce means an official abandonment. Meaning I'm ready to turn away. A public official abandonment means saying, listen, my lifestyle will show that I'm renouncing all that I have. And I'm not saying that you come and just lay everything here at the altar and say, hey, whatever y'all want to do with it. But what is God calling you to do? And I'm not counting that out either. What are you being called to do that you're rejecting and you're not listening? Because Jesus says, listen, if you're not willing to do whatever I ask you to do, lay it all on the line, you cannot be my disciple. That is what He says right here. And then He finally finishes with, salt is good. And this is just a break all of a sudden. He finishes with this. Salt is good. And salt is good. Okay. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is of no use, either for the soil or for the manure pile. It is thrown away. He who has ears, let him hear. Salt. All of a sudden, he flips to salt. Salt. My wife uses a lot of salt. She says that she uses a normal amount of salt, and I don't use enough salt. Okay, but salt, it seasons the food. It has a purpose. It melts ice. I even heard that you can like throw it in the dishwasher and make the suds go down if you put the wrong soap in there or something. I don't know, something like that. My stepdad told me. But salt has so many different uses. And imagine, though, if it loses its taste, it becomes insipid, it has no purpose anymore. And Jesus is saying, listen, if salt loses its saltiness, it's worthless. And what he's doing, he's playing off of what he's just said. If you're not willing to give these things up and not be my disciple, if you want to call yourself my disciple but not be willing to lay it all on the line, your discipleship is worthless. It's useless. I cannot use you if you're not willing to throw it down for me. So, I don't want to be tasteless salt this morning. How much does it cost? Jesus lays it down. It's going to cost your life. It's going to cost your family in some cases. It's going to cost your possessions in some cases. Basically, it's going to cost you be willing to lay it all down for Him to be His disciple. So we answered how much it costs, but then is it worth the cost? And it's very easy. I'm going to have, of course, a biased answer here, yes. And it's very easy for us to say, yes, I just lay it all down for Jesus. But I'm going to tell you the truth. It's not. I want to take you to a passage. And I want to tell you, not that it is worth it, but why is it worth it? And I love this passage, possibly one of my favorite, probably one of my favorites in the entire Scriptures. But it's Hebrews 11. It's the Hall of Faith. And it starts out and it goes through all of these different men, different people that have had this great faith for God. It goes through and it talks about Abel and his sacrifice. It talks about Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, and his consistency. It talks about Moses and being willing to follow the Lord in Egypt. Rather than being and enjoying the pleasures of Egypt, he then wanted to be with his own people and he led the people out. And it goes through all of these people's acts of faith, going on who they believed God was. Who they believed that Jesus incarnate in the Old Testament was. That Jehovah that they were following. But then it ends it. And this is my favorite part. It ends it 32 through 40. And it's talking about these specific instances, these specific stories, but then it ends with a whole wrap-up. And it says, the writer of Hebrews, and he's so eloquent, and he says, "And what more shall I say? What more can I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Japheth, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection." All great things. But then he flips it. "Some were tortured, refusing to accept release, so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, and mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth." And notice verse 39. "And all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised." They did all of this. Sawn in two, tortured. They go through all of these things, destitute, meaning alone throughout their entire lives. Jeremiah was a prophet who was exiled and had to stay by himself. He was not married or anything. Stayed by himself. They go through all of this stuff. Why? For something that was promised to them. Something that might happen. This Messiah, this Savior that was to come. This one that they had heard about, that they had written about, that they had studied about, this Messiah might come in the future. We are doing this because who we believe God is and what His promise is. Brothers and sisters, listen to me right now. Why is it worthy? It's because we have the promise.
We have seen the promise. We have the promise. It is written down. Jesus has come. The Messiah has made it. He has saved us. Everything that they worked for and went through, they were hoping would come. We get to work and do the same thing and put our lives on the line for what has come. Understand that. You don't fight for something that you think might happen in the future. You are fighting. You are going out. You are doing what you're supposed to do. You're laying your life down, renouncing everything for something that has already. It is history. It is written down. It has happened. Your Savior has called you. He expects of you. He asks you to do things. Lay it down or you cannot follow Him. Oh, it is so much more worth it for us because we have the promise that those other people hoped would come. You know, this year has been a hard year for me. Yeah, this was my first year in 4 years. I started out as a teacher and a coach. This is the first year I hung the whistle up. I had an opportunity. There was a pay cut involved if I took it. I stepped away from coaching this year. I had taught, coached girls basketball as main one for 3 years. I started out at Kennedale High School, very successful program there. I just kind of lucked out with the job, blessed with the job. And I started out there, and I came here, did middle school for a year, and the opportunity came for me to get out of coaching. And you know what? Through the year, now I didn't miss the time commitment of coaching. I didn't miss that. But I did miss the prestige. I missed the intensity. You know, I've got a few teacher friends here, and I still get called Coach Pope at school. But then every now and then you have the little jerk kid that would say, he's not a coach anymore. Yeah, you're right. But I miss the intensity of the games. I miss zeroing in on a ref that I knew more than. And letting him know over and over that I knew more than him during the game. I miss well-executed plays. Draw it on the board and it happens like it's supposed to. They're far, few and far in between, but they happen at times. I miss close games. I miss game planning. I miss looking across the sideline and looking at that other guy and saying, I'm sitting there thinking, what's inside your head? Because I'm about to pick it apart. I had to sit back and watch my former school. Girls that I started out with when they were freshmen, when I first came and coached, they went through, they had a 30-win season. They went three or four rounds deep in the playoffs. We had a few players on the all-star team. Girls that I watched from freshmen, that I introduced them to high school basketball. Five of them signed letters of intent to play college basketball this year. Five. Tarleton State, Texas Wesleyan, ETBU. And I remember every now and then, man, I wished I was there. Was it worth picking up everything and moving here? Was it worth leaving? Is it worth the cost? Because, man, I really would like to be the JV coach and assistant varsity coach right now with Kennedale going through this playoff run. But then, you know what? I look out and I see the Rodriguezes. And I see Carlos, who I've gotten a chance to work with the last 2 years. I see Karen bringing people, and even today has one of her friends, you know, trying to go to camp. I see Ever, who I have numerous inside jokes with, and we understand each other's humor. He slept on a couch this morning, by the way, in his backyard, in the back deck. We found out. Don't know why. He was just there. You know, I look out, I see Mike Turner. And I can remember when him and Manette first started visiting and how excited Pastor and I was. Oh man, we got new visitors. You know? And they're you know, they come in, they're interested. And now Mike is serving as one of my youth leaders. Brother Ed and Miss Judy teaching me what generosity is and caring about my family. Brother Jesse teaching me not to take any moment ever seriously. Brother David, near 70 years old. Sorry, Brother David, put that out there. He's gone to camp with me every year, and he'll go to church camp with me again this year. And he does everything for it. I don't have to ask. It's done. And there's no complaints. There's no arguing. Miss Linda, being basically the grandmother to my children that's not here right now. Miss Carla faithfully serving. I can look out and I see all these faces. Brother Terry driving the vans every Wednesday and Sunday. Brother Jerry, Miss Shirley, they're always going to be sitting back there doing sound and video. If you ever need to shake their hand, they're right there. Brother Jim Brewer is here every Saturday and I think every other day of the week also. If he's not here, he's definitely looking at the security cameras and posting pictures. Brad Griffin, a year ago, in around this time, came to his first thing in the back for VBS, parent night. And within a year, they joined the church. Maddie got saved. Taught 5th and 6th grade at VBS. Haley, we prayed for you, and you're here Thursday night. Gosh darn it, I said I wasn't going to cry. My daughter was heading home. Had heard about Jesus all week long. What it means to be saved. What do you do? My wife calls me. We're trying to tear things down, donate the stuff to another church, trying to load it up for them. And all of a sudden, Brittany calls me. McKenna's asking a lot of questions about this, and she's answering right. Something we've been working on. We've been praying with her about. We've been praying for her about. And Brittany says, "Do you want me to turn the car around and come back?" I said, "Yes, come back." And we got to sit in the parking lot Thursday evening, sit in our car, and walk our daughter through the plan of salvation. And we got to hear her pray, "Jesus, I hope you saved me. I know you died for me. I love you." And then to listen to her in the car afterwards, and everybody's excited. And we're just, she's 7, and so we're still, didn't she get it? Did she understand? And then we're sitting at Bucky's getting gas, and she's sitting in the car, and she says, "When I get to heaven, you know, can I give Jesus a friendship bracelet?" And Brittany says, "Well, he'll be right there. You can just give him a hug." And my little 7-year-old daughter sitting back there, tears just started rolling down her face. She said, "I just love Jesus. Let me tell you, is it worth it?" You bet it is. You can have all the basketball you want. Because Jesus asked us to lay it all on the line today. He asked us to be willing to renounce everything and walk away from it. I'm going to ask you, have you done that today? If you'll please stand. Eyes closed, heads bowed. Musicians make their way back up here. I'll be down front. If you want to talk to me, that's fine. But I'd much rather you talk to him today. This altar is here for you to lay it down. This is simply a symbolic gesture for you to come up here. But I do know that when you're willing to come up to these steps, that you're much more willing to lay it down for him. What are you holding back? Because he says, "Listen, if you're willing to hold something back from me, you can't follow me." If we're going to grow as a church, if we're going to grow as Christians, if we're going to grow closer, we got to be willing to lay it all down today. It's time to give up what we want. It doesn't work anyway. I'm going to ask you to respond today, however you see fit. If you need to talk to me, I'll be down front, but this altar is much more important with you and your talking to the Lord. Let us sing.